Welcome to another episode of Prague Will Find a Way, your friendly neighborhood podcast. I'm Jonathan Block.
And I'm Jay Vallade.
And what are we going to talk about today, Jay?
Today we are talking about 90s Prague.
The 90s.
Now, a couple episodes ago, we did 80s Prague, and we concentrated primarily on early 80s Prague. And we didn't really get into the late 80s, which was kind of a renaissance of pop Prague.
Yes.
But that led itself into the 90s. So
yeah.
We didn't. Well, maybe another episode we'll talk about the late 80s Prague. Because
yeah.
it's its own thing versus that early 80s post-punk Prague.
Right.
The late 80s Prague was something a bit different, where
it was
a little more polished and a little more accessible.
I concur, and I think you nailed it on the head, and then that just kind of went over that January 1st, 90 line and kind of kept going a little.
Yeah. So John and I were talking about this just prior, and during the 90s, again, I think as I stated in the 80s, I was starting to branch out more musically. I mean, I always had my fingers all over the place with different types of music that I liked, but Prague was always the main thing. And then as the 90s went on, I was probably concentrating more on the bands I liked in Prague rather than finding a whole bunch of new Prague bands that I would follow. So I was writing a list of all these Prague albums that came out through the 90s, because all the usual suspects still continued to release stuff throughout the 90s. They might not have been their best or their most popular, but they did continue to release stuff. So it was still fertile ground for the mainstream Prague. But John, unlike me, was trying to delve into things that he hadn't heard. So we kind of had, when we were putting our lists together of things we liked and didn't like, I had not heard most of the stuff that he, I mean, I had heard of, but it wasn't stuff that I would be like, oh, my favorite album from the 90s was this.
I'd right.
be like, oh, well, yeah, I heard that, but I never
it's 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to imagine that 30 years ago, but yeah, I was always looking for Prague and being very disappointed in the late 80s and the early 90s. I know there were bands around and whatnot. It was just a weird time for, you know, you kept thinking something was going to happen and never did. Like Marillion, you know, it was like,
waiting to happen.
Yeah. Right? Exactly. And oh my God. Okay, Marillion. And then that just kind of petered out.
But
I didn't
think it did peter out to me. My wife and I both liked Marillion in the early 90s, and we would go to see them all over the place on the East Coast whenever they came to town. I mean, and then to the point of them doing their whole late 90s thing with starting crowdfunding and all that kind of thing, because they couldn't make money over here because they were just touring local clubs. We would go, and we were part of the front row club where you'd go there because it was always GA and you'd...
I'm talking more about the effort the bands had to put in and the public perception. Nowadays, you get, you know, Marillion can fill 2,000 to 5,000 seaters. You know, you get a band like we talked about last time, 80s, IQ, who is really a cult niche band. They can't tour, but they can play 5 or 6 shows and fill like 4 or 5,000 seaters around England. You couldn't do that in the 80s or the 90s. No, nobody. So I was talking more from that. I think kudos to the bands that, you know, I mean, you could say, I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, I wish Fish had never left Marillion, you know? Like, because they were headed for disaster, I mean. But now we got two separate lines. You got Fish and you got Marillion. So, you know, you kind of ended up getting, you know, kind of two different paths and two different things going on there.
So, yeah, well, sticking on the Marillion thing, because 1990 was Fish's Wilderness, Vigil.
Wilderness
of Years. And my wife and I actually were in London, and we saw him at the Hammersmith Odeon, and that was kind of fun. But that was, you know, 90. So that right. I don't really even think of as the 90s.
Right. It's Prague, it's the 80s. You know, when did the 80s end? In 1991, you know. but, excuse me, the, you know, and then you, but it's cool that that's 90. And then you think about the entire decade. Think about Marillion Earthfish, like the changes. The change and just the between, way yes. the music, the amount of music that they ended up putting out in that decade
was
is amazing, you know.
But as you said, from a filling the seats, they went from, you know, major record labels yep. to independent record labels to having to crowdfund and doing all this stuff, which, so it was, you know, the bleak years for them. And,
yeah.
Even though they had output and they were doing stuff, I don't think, you know, from, I'm obviously not privy to it, but I think it was probably tough for them during those times. Even, yes, I mean, when I'm wearing my talk shirt from 94, I saw them at the New Haven Coliseum for this tour, and it was sparsely yeah. attended.
Yep.
Which yeah. was kind of sad because they had gone through their whole union thing where they in the round with a million people and yep. the whole thing. And the tour was very well attended to the talk tour, and it was not, I went to Madison Square Garden and that was fantastic. And
right.
they had a ton of people there.
Yep.
But the smaller shows were probably not as, and so that was like writing on the wall for them of, and then it was again sparse, lean times, I think.
And I think the bands that embraced that and kind of worked through it probably did better mentally than the, I think of, you know, I mean, I saw Emerson, Lake and Palmer in 1977 at a, you know, 10th, 12th at Civic Center, sold out. And then in 92, 93 at the Oakdale Theater, which was yeah. fine, beautiful place to see him. I don't know how many, 2,000 people maybe.
Yeah.
They were happy as can be, but times obviously,
yeah.
obviously it changed, but it changed so much that even now people look at that from this day and say, oh, if I could play the places like that, it would be amazing, yeah. you know?
Which is where most of these bands are now.
Exactly.
They're in that realm of the 2,000, 4,000 seaters of the
right.
bigger names, unless you're Genesis or
right.
whoever.
Right, yeah. Know? I mean, somebody like Genesis, it's funny because, excuse me, Genesis continued to play big places. When Crimson came back, they played the same size places they played last time. So they were right. always lateral, you know?
Right.
From the 70s on, they were always playing anywhere from like 2,000 to 4,000 seaters,
yeah.
you know? And when they came back in the 90s, it was the same thing. So it wasn't much different for them. But we actually set ourselves a little thing, like a little, hey, what were your top two, you know, Prague albums of the 90s, and what were your top two Prague songs? In hindsight, maybe limiting it to two, because there's a lot of down unders and we could talk about those too. But you want to talk about your picks and
right.
why you picked them?
So I had two. My two were Signify by Porcupine Tree.
Albums.
Album.
Okay.
And Afraid of Sunlight by Marillion. And I, it was kind of weird. I had to put this through the lens of what my favorites were at the time as opposed to what my favorites are now, because I really loved Afraid of Sunlight when it came out. That was their last big album on a major record label. So they were in the press,
right.
they were doing videos, they were
lots
touring.
Of singles.
And yeah, yeah, so there was a lot of activity. And I really liked the album. I thought that it was a really good album. They were kind of stretching their legs in different kind of ways. You know, they had the song Afraid of Sunlight. They had, you know, two different versions, one a big rocking anthem kind of thing, and then one kind of this mellow Joni Mitchell-y kind of thing that I think they refer to it as. So I thought that was really cool. And then Porcupine Tree, Signify was the first album by them that I had purchased. And I had read about them in the music press or something. And I was like, I found it at Secret Sounds, and Chris had a promo copy or something. And so I bought that, and I really liked it. It's, you know, miles from anything that I typically, it was closer to Crimson in its darkness.
Right, yeah.
But I liked it because it was different. I mean, the way that they were sonically, it was mellow, and then it was hard, and then it was, you know, spoken word, and not them speaking, but like clips of radio broadcasts and all this kind of stuff all put together in this little package. And I thought it was really cool. But again, a band on a small record label that they switched over for their next two albums, to the point I didn't even know their next two albums came out.
Wow.
you know? Yeah. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, Porcupine Tree had two more albums in the 90s? It wasn't until they were on Lava in like 2001, which was a subsidiary of Atlantic, that album came out and they got all this press. And now I was all of a sudden, I'm like, well, what happened to me? And then I found the other albums. In the meantime, I was like, well, you know, again, early days of the internet too. So it was not like you had places you could go just look stuff up. And they weren't on my radar to like follow, like, oh, where, when, because I didn't see them live or anything. They were right. Still this band from England that I liked their album. But over the course of the 90s, I really liked that album,
right?
Even though it was an outlier for me. Songs, I did Homeworld by Yes, which is 1999, so we're kind of on the edge of the 2000s.
When was Union?
Union was 91.
Okay, all right.
Right? So Union came out, and I you know, I was had hopes, high hopes for that album, but I think because I was such a big fan...
Lift Me Up from that album?
It is.
Okay.
I was such a big fan of that band, I didn't feel like it came through cohesively to me. It was like this amalgamation of the Yes West Coast and the British Yes. And so there were eight people on it, plus all these session musicians, and it just didn't do anything for me. So after that, then they did the Talk album with just the 90125 lineup, which I really enjoyed that album. But
Tony Kaye was on that?
Yeah.
Was he on the tour?
Yes.
Okay.
And then that broke up when I think they saw the writing on the wall. They were also on Victory Records. And that went under like the day before the album came out. It was just a disaster. And then they did these things. They got back with Rick Wakeman and Steve Howe.
Keys to Ascension.
And they did the Keys to Ascension albums, which I thought were good.
Right.
And had some nice moments, but not my favorite albums. And then they got together with, they did another album in between Open Your Eyes. But then they got together. Rick had left the band.
So you're just going to brush right over Open Your Eyes? You're just,
yeah, it was not my favorite. Okay. There were a couple songs I thought were really cool.
Right over
There were a couple songs I thought were really cool, and they were there were some good moments on that album. But as a whole, it didn't.
Was Magnification together. The 90s or 2000s?
No, that was 2000. Okay. So
we'll get to that.
Yeah. So The Ladder comes out, and that was Billy Sherwood was in the band, Steve Howe, Chris Squire, Alan White, John Anderson, and Igor Khoroshev.
Okay, he was the keyboard player.
Keyboards on it. Okay. And I don't know that he was a member. I'm pretty sure he was on the album.
Currently residing in where they now
found. Yeah, but they put out this album, this song called Homeworld, which they ended up using it in a video game. But I thought it harkened back to some of the best stuff in Yes that I liked from the past. So that's why I liked it as my... I think other ones that I had on my list, album-wise.
Yeah, Down Unders.
I'm going to just give them to you. Sure. It was The Songs of Distant Earth by Mike Oldfield. I thought was one of his best efforts because we did a whole thing on Tubular Bells. Yeah. But this was, I thought, one of his best albums outside of that.
I agree. It's the only Mike Oldfield CD I currently own. You gave that to me, actually.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, I believe you gave that to me for a birthday one year.
But it's an album that I love.
Yeah,
by him.
I agree.
And I don't know how that fits in that time-wise, because he had a whole bunch of stuff that he was
prolific.
He was prolific.
Yeah, it was amazing.
He was prolific until he wasn't.
You think of him not being prolific. Yeah, when he wanted to be prolific, he actually was very prolific.
Tons of stuff coming up. Yeah. So that was 94. That was just one of my favorites. So there you go.
All right.
You go.
I go. Okay, so...
Wait. My other song, sorry, was The Strange Engine by Marillion from The Strange Engine.
Okay. Engine. And what do you want to say about that?
It was a sidelong concept piece about, you know, the strange engine, the human being condition, whatever, and the story of Steve Hogarth's life, basically. It was my take on it. And it was great because it has ebbs and flows and rocking and mellow, and I really enjoyed that.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
The human biological machine is a transformational apparatus. All right, my tune. So I got to lay out the scene here because I've been, you know, for me, it was like clutching at straws, ha, 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 no pun intended, for Prague at the end of the 80s and the 90s, early 90s. So, yeah, you had Fish and you had this. I said this before in Pineapple Thief, I feel the same way about some of the Porcupine. There's just this atmospheric sound, even if they were getting heavy. And then lo and behold, all of a sudden in 1993, it was really more 92, 93, Swedish Prague exploded on the scene, essentially mainly Anglicard, but I picked Anecdotin's Vemode, which was their first album from 93, again 30 years ago. It's hard to believe. Went to a different record store, and we're going to do an episode just on record stores because we actually live in a part of the country where there were some very, very amazing record stores. So the one I went to a lot was Brass City Records. Walter, love that guy. I walked in one day and he's just like, you got to hear this thing. And he puts that on, and it was like, you know, starts out with a little kind of cello mellotron, and then it's just like beats you over the head. Very crimson-y.
Oh, absolutely.
Very crimson-y. And I would say that for me, that's the, I come from that more aggressive side of Prague, King yeah. Crimson, Van de Graaff Generator, that as, and then you may find this interesting when I talk about when I think about the continuum of aggressive Prague. After that, I would put somebody like Yes, because I think Yes, you take away the John Anderson voice and they can be very aggressive. Yeah. And then I would put like Genesis and then like Gentle Giant and stuff like that. But anyways, I always went for that more. So like to hear that. And also, people were not using the Mellotron at that time. So that is the first time the Mellotron came back. And people kind of don't look at the Anglicard only had a couple of albums, but Anecdotin, they still have the same lineup, same four people. To this day, 30 years later, they don't put all on new music, but they play shows occasionally. But I still believe they fundamentally changed where Prague went. They brought back the heaviness, and you started hearing that as the decade went on. Even Stephen Wilson's album started to get harder. Everybody's albums got a little harder. They were bringing like the original keyboards back, the Mellotrons, and that's definitely from the Swede. So if you haven't heard that album, there are points where you're like, it is so derivative. I mean, the last song, it's that just, is the last song, two Mellotrons playing brass come in, and it's like, it just sounds like a Lost Crimson thing. But it's great.
Because I had not really heard it. And so you put it on, you texted me your list, and I'm like, wow, he's going out. Because I picked these very mainstream sort of things, and as far as Prague is concerned. And you picked that, and so I put it on, and I'm like, it's basically a take every King Crimson album from the 70s, from Lizard on, basically, and just put them all together.
But just like
which
you
was,
said.
Which was very interesting.
Well, like you said, what was I thinking and what was I listening to at the time?
Sure,
at the
time,
that was like, boom, a breath of fresh air. Crimson was not around.
Right.
You know, I mean,
None of that stuff was there anymore.
At that time was doing Sylvian and Fripp, more atmospheric stuff.
Which was great, of course. That's not even on my list.
I
love that album. I love that album.
Yeah.
That could be in my group here. This was my thing. I love that album.
Yes.
That album was fantastic.
So very, very heavy. So my second one is a little more, it's American, so I wanted to pick American prog band. So Echolins, As the World, probably holds, it was on a major label, it was on Sony. I don't know what Sony, I know what they were thinking because I believe Derek Shulman was there. And if you listen to it, their particular vocal harmonies are Gentle Giant. Now, it's interesting because when you look at American Prague, it's a lot of American Prague came from the Maryland, Washington, D.C. area.
Okay.
Happy the Man and the Muffins. There's a whole bunch of bands, and someday we'll talk about American Prague. But anyways, they're all informed somehow by Gentle Giant. Yeah. And those guys are very Gentle Giant.
They are. And so, again, I've heard of them and probably had heard a couple songs here and there, but so I sat down to listen to that album, and we were talking about this before offline, but one of my favorite albums from the early 90s was a band called Toy Matinee, which was Patrick Leonard and Kevin Gilbert, and Guy Pratt actually is the bass player on that. Yeah, and I love that album because it's all over the place. But it's Steely Dan, then it's, you know, then it's Gentle Giant, then it's whoever, and they're just all over the place. And I really like it, but I really like the vocals and the harmonies. And when Eklund starts playing that very first song, I'm like, oh, this reminds me of Toy Matinee, which I was kind of shocked after listening to the Anecdoten album. I'm like, these are two sides of the John Block coin, because they are absolute opposites. But then they go
off. Do they have
multiple
moments.
Lead singers? Because there were some singers that I really enjoyed and some that I was like, eh.
I honestly don't know. I mean, I believe they have a lead singer. They have other guys too.
When they're singing in harmony, I think that the songs are great.
And they do those twisty, turny musical gentle giant things too, which I like. It's just, and they cover, like you were just, they cover a lot of ground. I mean, they cover very proggy. They get very symphonic at parts. I mean, the last song, they're talking about the death of somebody, and it's just like, you know, it's one of those kind of swelling prog afterglow, Genesis afterglow moments. I just think it's just a great album. There's something about it. I, like you said, time and place. I remember when it came out. I remember reading about it, and everybody was like, prog album on. And so, you know, hope sprang eternal, like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? And of course, nothing did, and they got dropped. And the album probably didn't do very well, but I just, it's a point in time, and it's very... It balances that, certainly balances out my other pick.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. It's like,
So there's that. For the songs I picked, by far, for me, the most, like, not even prog, but the pinnacle prog song for me of the 90s is IQ's Narrow Margin. So from, I think it's 95, they put out a concept album, Subterranea, which is kind of goes up and down. It doesn't, but that last song is just goes through so many kind of changes. I'll be honest, the singer, Peter Nichols, sometimes I'm like, he's okay. Sometimes I don't think it fits. He wasn't in the band for some time too, but he's a founding member. He's on that. There's something about that song that, like, it's 20 minutes. It goes through a lot of different changes, but it takes, there's some parts where I'm like, sounds like Marillion, sounds like Genesis. Like, they very good. And they've always been true to their path. You know, we're totally tier two or tier three band, right? Not a lot of people know them, but they've never changed. They've always kind of been the way they were, at least to me, that they've kind of, we're prog and we're not going to do anything different. And they've made a little career out of it. So that's that song. And then, of course, I did pick, it's not going to be mainstream, but I wanted to pick something from one of the big bands.
God forbid.
You know?
This is a prog.
Well, you know, and I will, you know, I have my down-unders that are more popular, but I picked Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Changing States from the Black Moon album. And to me, Black Moon is an encapsulation of that album of what I was feeling in a lot of that time. You'd have one or two songs surrounded by a lot of songs that I just didn't care about.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt a lot of releases around that time, which is why when the Anglicard came out and the Anecdote and then the Eklund, I'm like, oh wow, there's prog albums I can actually listen to front to back now. And but that song, that album, like you were saying about one of your picks, it totally encapsulated their classic sound. It's got the Keith Emerson keyboards all over the place. It's got the pulsating Greg Lake bass that you forget about until all of a sudden he does one of his, you know, does one of his runs, you know, and it's like, oh yeah,
Greg,
you know,
he's a keyboard. Yeah, he's a bass player, yeah, not just a singer.
But he does those things, and it's like they just fit perfectly. So I just love that. I would always hear that song, like, oh, see, they can do it. They can do it. My unders were for songs. Well, actually, for albums, Marillion.com probably would have been the next. I'm not the biggest H era. But there's something about that album I love. I think that's a great album. A lot of the other albums from the 90s I like, but not the whole album, like three or four songs. That's an album where I do put it on from start to finish. And I'm a relatively newcomer. I listened to all the new ones when they came out because you had them.
Yeah.
Radiation was the only one that stuck in my head and I would listen to over the years. And about a year ago, I was like, I want to give those 8 years a fair chance. And I listened to every single album and I would make a playlist of what I liked. And that album, I picked the whole one. Yeah. So I just love that album. There's something about that album. So that was a down under. For songs, I was really thinking of Genesis on the Shoreline, which is a B-side, didn't make We Can't Dance, but is such a Genesis kind of song. Vroom by Crimson was another one I was thinking of. And because I spied it on your list here, you have Tull, Jethro Tull's White Innocence from Catfish Rising.
Okay.
That was like a return to the Tull prog form. And I remember always wanting to hear that. Let's not forget, internet was coming around that time, but you could not hear music. You were not. And if I was like, oh, I heard, oh, you no, know, White just... Innocence on the radio in 1992, how the hell am I going to hear it again, right? I would have to buy it. And I'm like, I'm not buying it just for one song. You know, now I go, I'm like, I feel like hearing White Innocence. I go to Apple Music and I can hear it. Right. So that's kind of my list. It's funny, though, because... was the it Bites, that wasn't the 90s,
was
it?
That was the 80s.
That's because when you said we hadn't talked about the late 80s, we'd never really talked about It Bites,
right?
Because the what was their second
Once Around
album?
The World.
Yeah, Yellow Cri-
oh no, the, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that to me was
that was
amazing prog album, and I view that, I see like a line from that to the Echo Lynn one, like there could have been a line, you know, from that to Marillion to
right,
Da,
right.
You know.
Oh, I love that album.
Another underline for me, which you would, so Fish, I looked at the Fish albums and I couldn't pick a Fish album.
That you, I love Wilderness, but that, again,
I like,
that was like 89, that single came out, and most... 90 came out the album, probably like January or something. So I didn't really think it was truly the 90s.
So what I did, I thought about what songs do I like, and believe it or not, the song that, the album that had the most songs that I liked on it was Suits.
Really?
And my one song would be, and this is just totally off the wall for some reason, I love this song, it's from Suits, Pipeline, Fish okay. Pipeline. There's something about that song I love. That would have been a song. So as is our want, the episode running really, really long. So we're going to split this one up into two. And we'll see you on the next episode for part two of Prague in the 1990s.